State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is back for Tacky Talk. Hey, Tacky, welcome back.
Hey, happy September, everyone. And sadly as well, it's today, September 11th, and it's a day of remembrance. So we'll welcome each other back after the summer holiday. At the same time, it's a day of mourning and remembrance on something that is most tragic attack on U.S. soil in the history of our country by a terrorist group today on 9/11.
24th anniversary, hard to believe, on a day very, very similar to today, a gorgeous summer-like day with not a cloud in the sky. And it was very similar that day 24 years ago. I remember it well.
Yeah, same here. I mean, as I kind of remind folks, I am a little older than people realize. And, I was like, I was 27, I think, when that happened. And I remember it was, again, it was the Stephen Lynch congressional primary replacing Moakley. And it was the Sheets failing preliminary because was it Boozy who was running that year as the
That's
third?
right.
And, it was not a high turnout, but I remember, seeing people at the polls at the Lutheran Church, Congressional Church across from CVS and Clay and Beale, and talking to folks about this. And I'd say it's the only time I've ever been evacuated by in the state house that wasn't kind of a fire situation. Very clearly remember coming in and watching television, not believing what I was seeing, and the trooper knocked on our door and says, "We got to go."
Yeah, it
So.
was a very uncertain time for sure. Nobody really knew exactly what was happening.
Yeah, and we did go back to work the next day just to let everybody know the state house did reopen on September 12th, and I was in the office on September 12th, still very unsure about what was going to happen next. And unfortunately, decade plus later, and we have the Boston bombing, and again the state house was open the next day as well. I was in the office, so. People may not realize that when it comes to Capitol buildings, many Capitol buildings, not all, but many Capitol buildings have secure barriers, meaning there's like a 1,000-foot distance from the roadway to the main Capitol building. The State House is one of the maybe dozen or less Capitol buildings where there is literally no barrier between the public and the main street of the building. That you
No,
can
it's just a set of stairs. That's it.
Well, exactly it. You can actually go down Durand Street and you can walk right against the building on the sidewalk. In the old days, they just had windows that were locked. There was no plexiglass that you see today, which is a post 9/11, especially after the Boston bombing. They put much more plexiglass up against the first and second floors, against the Durand Street side. I mean, the State House Garage comes up on the I'm sorry, Bowdoin Street side, there's the plexiglass you can walk by. And then the Durand Street side is where the State House Garage is. And there's really nothing there because regular traffic drives right out there, just like any other building in anywhere, actually. We don't work in exactly the most invisible building. It has a giant gold dome.
That's right. And there was, speaking of 9/11, a nice ceremony there this morning and one right here in Quincy, too.
Yeah, I was at the Quincy ceremony with the local delegation, John Keenan, Dave McCarthy, Dan Mitton, the mayor, obviously. Actually, Greg Hanley came up. Some people remember Greg as the former Ward 1 counselor. He's not a Plymouth County commissioner. Greg still keeps coming back no matter what. Good Germantown kid. And, I give the fire department in the city a lot of credit. They keep it very solemn. We don't pontificate. It is what it is. But also reminded us that there's a generation of folks that did not live through it. 24 years push it well into a generation of folks that didn't live through it or were very young children at the time. And, I'm not old enough to remember the Kennedy assassination. But that was a big milestone in people's memories. And, mine was the Challenger, a shuttle. Explosion. I remember coming
Yes,
home.
1986.
Yep, came back from school and was shocked to see that happening because it was a half day school. And I was one of those kids that watched shuttle launches at like 4 in the morning when people did things like that. So, Everyone has different tragic moments in their lives, but 9/11 in particular has, impacted many generations. And now we have a new generation that did not have a direct experience, and it's part of their history books.
That's right. Absolutely. And thankfully, they are still teaching it, I know, at least in the public schools, to continue the legacy of those folks that lived through it and those who didn't.
Yes, and my remembrances are very important as well. I think over time, people tend to either not remember, forget, or just move on from important historical events. And as you guys know, I'm a big believer in teaching history. I believe in teaching the arts as well, even though I'm a terrible artist myself. But I mean, this is always my criticism of standardized testing, is that we now teach towards tests and kind of leave behind these important historical components that actually impact our lives. And not just locally, but at actually the world level, right? I mean,
Oh, for sure.
I mean, the greatest generations moved on for World War II, right? And
Yeah, I mean, if we didn't still teach about Pearl Harbor, there's almost nobody left from that era, right? At that day, at least.
well, we also tragically as well, we're losing Holocaust survivors.
That's true too. Yeah.
Those stories are being lost as well. And you are aware there are people who have many beliefs who deny history was there despite many people's eyewitnesses. And the segment of the population who believe the earth is flat and people didn't make it to the moon, the Holocaust wasn't real. And that is a segment of the population. And this type of situation and how we teach our history, but also the passing of people who are first eyewitnesses or a participant or a victim of a historical circumstance or historical history, is now lost in the annals of time. And unlike even 200 years ago, we have the capacity to maintain much better records than ever and the ability to record firsthand accounts. And I think one of the challenges is that people need to accept that if someone was actually there, they are indeed telling the truth.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it brings us to a much more difficult conversation about political violence. Most recently, the assassination appears of Charlie Kirk.
Yeah, I'm not sure how else to describe it than an assassination myself. I mean, I didn't want to watch the live video because we do live in a century where people have cameras all the time. And, again, as I said earlier, we have more ways of commemorating or recognizing or remembering or seeing with our own eyes tragedies. Sadly, artificial intelligence is going to make this tougher because it's easier to fake. And this is not a fake. But I can see a promulgation of accusation that it was faked. I mean, people who deny Sandy Hook, for example, as actually happening is frightening. And now with the advent of AI, I am very concerned that Charlie assassination may be mistreated, not the tragedy and the horror that it is, but being utilized for a political gain, fundraising. That is shameful. You should shame fundraise off someone's death. Politically speaking, you should not ask for campaign funds on people's deaths. But I can see it happening, and I also can see people making accusations that this wasn't real because of the nature of how we think today. And what's frightening, of course, is that this truth is still large as of our conversation here at 11:18 in the morning. And it's a recognition of a string of violence against politicians and political activists that's gone on this year. I mean, Pennsylvania governor's home was basically firebombed. And, the former speaker of the House in Minnesota, and his husband was shot, as well as another pair of electeds, actually not that long ago either. And unfortunately, I do believe there's a psychological effect of people that when you see one person do something, I don't care who they attempt to kill or have killed, it's going to embolden other people to want to do the same thing. And there's a weird psychological component to that. And they, and I hate to put it because cruelly, but it is open season on politicians and political activists.
Well, there was assassination attempt on the president, so it seems to have no boundaries.
No, there's one attempt, and then they had the 1 year attempt, right? People kind of forgot in the second year attempt at the golf course.
Oh, right, I forgot about that. You're right.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's not the only one. And I'm very aware that places like the State House do get threats on a regular basis.
Mm.
When I first started in this gig 30-odd years ago, it was not surprising to see threats. But most of us, we kind of dismissed as kind of like, you read, it's like, okay, this is a little too crazy. But nowadays, regardless of the threat content, the state police wants to see it now. And this is how time has changed. While violence isn't new, I think people tend to think it's new. It's not. The seriousness we take of violent accusations or threats is considerably even more heightened now than it was after 9/11.
Has it changed the way you do your job, Jackie?
Not really. Those who may not be aware, we do not receive any kind of police protection. The state troopers had informed us after the January 6th insurrection that something happens, call your local police, which that's what advice we received. Like I said, I'm a kid that grew up in the city in a very different time period where I was much less welcoming. So, but I also tell people I'm a lot older. It's not like you can get into a fist fight when I was, I suppose, when I was a younger person. I don't think I can, I don't think I can manage a fist fight today as opposed to when I was like 40 years ago. just, but, Yeah, no, I mean it's a little bit different because I'm very conscientious from my childhood to even to now. And I had a huge racism issue of Asian racism, not that far back now either. It's only about not even 3 full years. When you grow up in that kind of environment, you tend to have a greater awareness of, potential dangers. What does it mean you can't catch me off guard? Of course you can catch me off guard. I'll get distracted. But personally speaking, people who feel like, oh, this is scary for the first time, like, well, that's my everyday life since I was a child in Quincy. So it's a sad and awful thing to say, but you'd be surprised how many people, when I make commentaries on that, they all look at me like seven heads because they themselves have never had to fear because you're part of the accepted society. I'm very aware of my circumstances, not just necessarily in Quincy society, given my growing up, but also in politics. I am very cognizant how different people are treated very differently from each other.
And it's something you have no control over, because it's just based on your name and the way you look, right?
Well, that's very true. I mean, and given the political environment the last 8+ years, it's become very fashionable again to make accusations, whether you say it privately in your own home or you say it out loud to me. It's become very fashionable as opposed to giving it a thought before you open your mouth or shoot that thought. And that's something that was always very much encouraged, and that now is no longer encouraged on how people behave.
Yeah, I see. Well, we have a long way to go for sure to societal harmony.
Now, as you know, and we talked about this a few times, I've been a student, even though I'm not an academic, of local politics and national politics, the extent I can, and international politics, the extent I'm able to do, for over 30 years now. I've been watching and remembering, and we talk about institutional knowledge a lot, which is very important. And again, I'll miss a date, I'll miss a name. It's not like I'm perfect. It's not like I write all this stuff down. But I mean, there's a lesson learned, more importantly, regardless of sometimes me forgetting a name or a date, it's the lesson I learned from different things people did or did not do. And this was, things from my own family, right? My dad, my mom, my family friends, personal friends, different lessons I learned in life. I mean, the best teacher in life, it's life itself. And people should, learn from good and bad things. You can learn from good things, you can learn from bad things, and you can learn from, tragedies as well as celebrations. But I mean, it is unstable. Globally too, not to change subjects too quickly, but France is on its fifth prime minister. Macron had appointed another one that he hopes survives. Thailand had re has now replaced the prime minister. Nepal's parliament building has been firebombed by protests.
That's right.
In case you're wondering, Nepal is located north of India, but just south of China in the Himalaya zone with Bhutan, and they've had 2 days of civil unrest as
I think, didn't Japan's prime minister just step down too?
Prime Minister of Japan stepped down. The internal party is trying to pick a new leader now to put before Parliament. Obviously, the Korean presidential elections with the spring replacing their president that was impeached. But guess what? Sometimes the system does work. Corruption is rooted, and the people have a say on replacement. Corruption in democracies, and it's done by independent investigation, which actually is very concerning in this country right now, that is no longer some checks and balances against executive authority to identify and root corruption. So I'm not going to get too deep into that, but I'm sure people have their personal opinions about government, but it's the ones who remove the people that are in charge of accountability in government are the ones that should be the most concerned with.
Right. And the way the government was established, there was supposed to be a system of checks and balances, starting with the Supreme Court, right?
Well, it was based on lessons in the past,
Yeah.
right? When bad things happen, people will take action to try to reduce the possibility of happening again, right? I can't say things are preventable. I don't like to lie like that, but you try to reduce the odds of danger. And implementing safeguards like inspector generals, consumer advocates, the ability to have quasi-independent agencies, the ability to have mechanisms of removal of office. Again, the Constitution has provisions to remove people, as well as the state constitution, in case of circumstances where there is clear corruption and no longer in, working in the public interest. Mechanisms there, and there is a responsibility to do that. And I was, again, depend on a self-interest in politics to maintain your political power and status. Well, again, this might shock in Congress. They've abdicated so much power to the executive branch as the majority party. It's actually quite frightening. In other political systems, the majority party does not abdicate this much authority. Many majority parties are trying to rein in their own leadership teams, whether the backbenchers rebel and decided to change parties, or there's challenges to the leadership team, not necessarily from the opposition bench. It can come from inside their own system to try to create a mechanism to ensure that the membership is being paid attention to. And as we talked about some other countries, there's third-party, quasi-independent investigations into corruption issues. So, I'm again I'm always aghast when any legislative body abdicates authority to the executive branch.
Yeah, well, Massachusetts is a good example with a Democratic majority. They have not done that.
No, as long as we maintain the ability to override a veto, as I say over and over again, we, the legislative body, maintains power. And it doesn't matter who the governor is.
Right, exactly. Yes, yeah. Speaking of, what is going on in the legislature these days, Jackie?
A whole lot of quiet right now.
I
August,
bet.
once I passed a National Conference of State Legislators, I think all of us fled the state.
That was a
Was
lot of work, I know.
a lot of work. There was a lot of exhaustion from people going after the conference from the close of July to August. And I've been getting a lot of emails in August of people telling us about public hearings September and October. And even for me, I came back straight to a public hearing on Monday and have three scheduled in October. And as you guys know, our deadlines have changed regarding the House and Senate bill reporting, and I'm just trying to move bills out as quickly as I can within the new system. At least, decision making is now faster, which makes it harder for me to get more information from folks who want to weigh in. It's not the best way to do it in some ways, but it's also very similar to part-time legislatures, legislatures that are only in 5 months or 45 days in some cases, or once every 2 years, in terms of short periods. They have to make rapid decisions, which may not be the right decision, but the deliberation process is still very short. This is what it's starting to feel like to me. I'm now in a shorter deliberation process. Thankfully, I do know a lot, as I think some people hopefully understand from listening to us for many years. But it doesn't mean I am able to synthesize that much data in such a short period of time, within 60 or 90 days. So, we're in the process of even now narrowing down our priorities, perhaps for one more long extension order into March. But then again, I need to produce something if I intend to do something on a one more extension order. So,
Okay.
there's strategic thinking there. But I mean, August is generally very quiet. There's no clear indication what we're doing this month yet. We do have the reconciliation budget coming up, which is the final tally for FY 25, fiscal year 25. We do reconciliation, and then we'll have the final counts regarding revenue and expenditures and see where we are.
Right.
And as we talked about in the past, the fiscal year for the for the federal government starts August, I'm sorry, October. October 1's fiscal year for the federal government. And they have a potential shutdown coming. And then
Again.
again, and then you still have the implications of the big, beautiful thing they
I
passed
was
out.
just going to ask about that. It feels like we're kind of in this in-between time, waiting to see what the cuts from the federal government will do to the state.
Yeah, in all states.
And all states, right? Yeah.
Yeah, as I mentioned before, states have no taxes and no fees, or minimum taxes, minimum fees, are not looking to increase revenue.
Right.
And their budget is largely driven by federal subsidies. I mean, as you hear me say over again, I mean, if you're a state that has no taxes, you're basically a welfare state for the feds. I mean, let's just call it what it is, right? States that have a better taxation system are not welfare states, even though we do take a lot of federal money. So it's a big difference when you're like 30% federal funded, or you're 70% federal funded,
Sure.
or your economy is so poor per capita. You can name states like Missouri, for example, and Louisiana, very low per capita states. That means they have higher need for federal services, and those states don't tax people. So as a result, as those services go away, there's a ripple effect regarding local economies. So if, let's say, you take away people's SNAP programs, and you have a lot more sadly starving children and families, that actually impacts grocery stores who take, SNAP program, and that it has a ripple effect in that local economy. Same thing of taking away unemployment benefits. There's a ripple effect in local economy. You lose housing, you lose your car, it becomes hard to get a job, and then you're not spending money locally. You just keep yourself maintaining a minimum standard of living. There are such things as communities which are pretty much not in this state, but some of the lower per capita states where communities are very dependent on government assistance. And I didn't realize like Alaska's 10% plus on food stamps, SNAP programs, right?
No, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, some states are as high as 30% of the population SNAP.
Well,
And it's a they tend to be lower per capita states.
yeah. Do you know what it is here, Tacky?
I don't know. Our
Okay.
SNAP programs, I want to say it's around 400 million-ish. I don't think
Okay, that sounds right. Yeah.
I don't think it was quite that high, but it's relative to the size of the population and the budget. It's actually not that much. I mean, when you look at a budget of about $62 million, 65 million, depending, I mean, billion, 62 or 65 billion, depending
Right.
on fixed cost calculation. We actually, you always get two numbers of us in the budget. One is with fixed costs and one's without fixed costs.
Yeah.
And it's always kind of like people always get those two numbers a little confused, including myself. But I mean, that's a drop in the bucket in terms of size of the budget overall. And
It's well under 10%. Yeah, well under, yeah.
well, and also don't forget, I mean, SNAP programs doesn't mean you're getting a full grocery bill for the whole week. I mean, it can
Right.
be as low as $50 a month.
Yep. Okay. So, okay. Yeah. Has less of an impact here.
Yeah, but it's still very important, don't get me wrong. I
Oh, for
mean,
the families that need it, for sure. Yeah.
yeah, and Quincy's poverty rate, I need to look at the US Census most recent numbers. On the last survey, but I still believe it's over 12% poverty level.
Yeah. I can tell you, I speak to a lot of the social service agencies. They're seeing nothing but increases in the need for their services, like food pantries. Housing assistance, fuel assistance. So it's an issue for sure.
Well, actually, here's another frightening thought. Now, a lot of these social service agencies have a federal funding component. So,
Correct.
should they lose federal funding, they're going to lay people off.
Yes, QCAP in particular, yeah.
So the choices are two. One, whether or not the state or city can put up some money to help guide them through this near term,
Right.
or they're going to engage in more private fundraising, which is extremely time consuming and requires more manpower than people realize. Those of
Right.
you listening that actually have done charitable fundraisers understand how much work really is involved. Now, trying to in this case of like QCAP, for example, to replace federal programs loss of which they pretty much manage many federal programs, could be in the millions of dollars, perhaps. And trying to fundraise replacement for millions of dollars is very involved, very time consuming, and going to the private sector. And should the economy slow down, which we can talk about more if you want,
Yeah, I think we should. Yeah.
which is going to be harder, not just on your pocketbook, but also business pocketbooks, to be generous.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's, yeah, we should definitely talk about the economy. There's talk of a potential interest rate cut in the next Fed meeting. Talk of stagflation. It's really uncertain right now where things are going.
Yeah, economists generally rely on historical historical figures to try to anticipate future figures. That's why everything's an estimate, because I don't care what anyone says, you cannot predict the future. Nor can you say, if I was there, this would have happened, because there's no way to prove it happened.
Right.
There's no way for me to say that if I was here, doing something 10 days ago, well, it would be a different outcome. No, I can't prove you that. That is,
You don't know. Nobody, you can't say that with
can't say
accuracy, right? You can, I mean, you can say it, but it's not true.
it's not true. If I was there 10 days ago doing XYZ, well, today would be different. No, that's complete. That's a lie, right? That's a straight up lie. Same
It's a
thing.
hope. I guess it's a hope.
Yeah. And then you say, economists and other people in that studied economy, whether it be in the financial industry or academics, everything has to be an estimate because the prediction's
Right.
un
It's an
oh.
educated guess. It's what it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
And much talk about this unemployment number revisions. All right. This is the part that's not said out loud. Unemployment estimates from the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, is based on surveys of a number of companies around the country that participate to create a general idea of what the situation regarding jobs are in the United States. It is 100% dependent on participation of these companies to report timely, and then they can compare those numbers to actual unemployment applications.
Right.
Problem. Not every business is timely on reporting their data. And then you use statistical analysis based on past information, try to fill in the gaps. And then as data comes in, in the progress, the data improves and data improves, you have revisions. And very clearly, for the last year, businesses either have not been reporting timely, delayed reporting, or just did not participate. As a result, it's thrown off all the data sets. So people are under this misconception that the government literally goes out there and goes into every business and counts every single head. That is what the portrayal is out there. What it is that you need these companies to actually come through on their side on data to create a better statistical analysis. And then you compare it to actual numbers on unemployment. The other funny thing is when I listen to other academics talking about this stuff, well, you have technology, this should be easier. No, it's a human issue.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You still need people to call or email or somehow, tabulate this data.
Yeah, so I'm listening to these academic scholars on the economy. Oh, we have technology. This should be easy. And I'm like, you clearly don't have to report to other people.
We have, state-of-the-art rocket ships, but if there's nobody to fly them, then they're just going to sit there on the launch pad.
That's exactly it. I mean, there's still a human component to these things. So I don't hear anyone criticizing businesses that aren't participating timely. Instead, you hear a lot about the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It's like sports folks, right? You don't blame the 25 people on the baseball team. You yank the manager.
That's true. Very good point, Jackie. Yes. But there's so many weird things going on in the economy. Like, why is gas still going up when oil is staying the same?
I'm still baffled by that one. I'm very baffled. We've talked about it literally all summer.
I know, because it's been
Literally.
happening all summer.
Yeah, it's about $62, give or take, yesterday
Yeah.
on gallon of crude. OPEC, if you haven't been told, OPEC has agreed to pump even more oil into the system globally because they're trying to kill the US shale market. Again, I don't like shale because it's disgusting. Fracking is a nasty, nasty, nasty
Yeah,
thing.
it's bad for the environment, yeah.
Oh, it's so bad for humans and environment. However, it's actually keeping oil prices very low. But if it gets too low, shaling becomes impractical. So OPEC's objective is to try to drive out things like shaling in other countries to bring prices back up, which helps them obviously. But I don't understand why gas prices are sitting at 289 to 305 on an unleaded.
Or higher.
Yeah, I saw 299 last night walking, but yeah, it'll get higher depending on locale, right? If you're in
Yeah.
Boston, it can be up to like almost $450
Yeah.
depending on what street corner you're talking about, right? So I don't know. I
Yeah.
cannot for the life of me understand what's going on because the gas stations make money on cents per gallon, not percentage of each gallon. It means it's a fixed cost return. And unless they increase that fixed cost return universally, you have a competitive disadvantage and they can't sell below wholesale price. and they make a lot of money on candy bars, right? And water, at the locales. So I'm very confused about what's going on here. I don't
It's
get it.
the summer driving season's pretty much over. It's like they're anticipating this surge in demand, and I don't see it.
And the fuel is not all fuels the same, right? Gas fuel isn't the same as jet fuel. People often make that mistake that if, there's a lot more flying, it impacts your local gas prices. No, it's two completely separate fuels. So I'm not sure what's going on still. I'm very troubled by this. Because it's not following no economic indicators. And it just makes signals everywhere, right? You have a 991 man, 100, was it 991,000 job revisions of not new jobs created. You have today's, this week's numbers is that unemployment has been steady in terms of people staying on the system, but there's a small tick up of people making applications. Consumer price index came in as expected around 2.9, which means the price, the PCE, whatever that stands for, the PCE is probably going to be over 3%, well below the Fed's target. Employment ticked up very little again, another tenth of a percent. And this is going to make the Fed do what they need to do. And the Fed Reserve Bank relies on the Bureau of Labor Statistics and other data sets that provide from them for the reserve banks and the federal government to make their decisions. And there'll be a cut. What does it mean to you? Honestly, not a lot. The short rates are designed between banks loaning money from the federal government because banks don't always have all the cash. So it impacts short-term borrowing. It affects your credit card. 0.25% reduction is not going to make a big difference on your credit card rates. And the long yield, anything 10 years in particular above, is driven by the bond market. It's actually not driven by the Fed Reserve. So more, it doesn't really affect mortgage rates the same way you think it does. It really helps your car loan. It's generally 5 years or less, but it won't help your home mortgage rates. That's
No.
completely driven by the market.
Yeah, it might impact savings rates. We'll see.
We'll see. I'm not going to criticize, but I mean, some of you folks have probably not been realizing exactly how little interest you're getting despite the Fed Reserve being higher. And I'm not saying you should do it, but there are many other alternatives out there for you to maximize your passive income. That is at your discretion, how you want to take that statement. But there is still plenty of good opportunities if you care to do the work regarding better interest rates and passive income. So you got that going on. The tariff impact, again, we talked about this all summer. It's a delayed impact. It doesn't happen right away. But the producer price index was lower than expected at 0.1% against 0.3%, meaning that the cost to produce stuff is lower, but manufacturing is not growing, which is a bad sign. And at the same time, inventories and stores are going up. And again, inventory and retail is a diverse term. We'd be closing our televisions, okay? So let's be understanding that, right? But inventory is actually piling up now as consumers have high confidence in spending, but they're actually not spending.
Yes, exactly. And that can translate into who knows wholesale price reductions in the future.
Yeah, and slow down in imports, right? The latest data sets show that we've had one of the lowest periods of imports from China because it went front loaded back in the spring.
Yep, they stocked up.
But if you look at the China data sets, their exports are fairly steady because they found a new place to export to in other parts of the world as they keep their currency low on purpose to try to get more exports out. But some of those exports may come back into the US. But we'll see what the next set of GDP numbers look like, not necessarily this quarter, but a more interesting quarter of next year in 26. Those will show give us an idea of the last 6 months regarding import exports. And when the United States imports less, that means the US economy is slowing down because consumers are not spending. When we export more, it means the other parts of the world are doing pretty good. They can afford US product. So, we it's reduce imports to the US when people aren't buying stuff, has an impact on countries. And that's gonna be interesting to see, going to Christmas season. And I still believe restaurants are under a lot of pressure. The holiday season is the make or break for many restaurants going to 2026. So still a lot of things to look at in the big data. In our level picture, I was talking to, I won't get into too many details, but talking to a senator's office that isn't local, part of Central Mass. And they got like 100 unemployment cases. I was talking about it. They're
Really?
dependent. Yeah. And, my office got 11 in one day. Not all of them were mine. Some belonged to the speaker and some belonged to Rep. Ayers. So Ron and Bruce got some referrals from my office. But the fact that 11 people called in a single day is a indication something's going on.
Yeah, be curious to see too with the I don't know if we've heard anything yet about the tourism numbers. At least anecdotally, they seem to be off.
Now, I agree with that. October is when you're probably going to see those numbers because there's
Yeah.
always a delay. I think the political environment has created an unwelcoming situation for foreign tourists. Especially the visa problems, as we talked about earlier, the increasing the visa by $250, which the family of four is $1,000, and even the dollar's a little bit weaker, it's still $1,000, which means
Yeah.
it's going to change how they spend the money in the United States. High visa rates for you to make more money at the federal level does not help the local economy. It does absolutely nothing to help the local economy. And it's just an unwelcoming environment. The Trump administration, unlike past administrations, like the shock and awe and reality TV behavior shows regarding immigration enforcement. If you look at its data, immigration enforcement is not new. It's just that it's not been showy. And there's repercussions on a global level because whatever comes on a new system is shown elsewhere. This is how we're being portrayed. We're portrayed as jerks, for lack of a better term, in other countries on how we talk to people or deal with people who don't look like the majority of the people in this country. And that's sending a ripple effect as well to other countries about whether or not this is a safe place to visit.
Yeah.
That fear that you can get picked up off the street, because you left your passport in your hotel room and then detained is not a very favorable feeling.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard about the immigration enforcement action at the Hyundai manufacturing plant. I think it was in Georgia.
Yeah, that was a little crazy. And here's why. Normally, when you have a situation like that, you should just go in, talk to the company, say, you got an immigration problem, let's get everybody resolved. Instead, they put everyone in handcuffs in a truck because they want to do a reality TV show. Now, Hyundai is the single biggest company in South Korea. They basically run their economy. They're that big, right? I mean, this is so mega important, not just in South Korea, but on a global level. And the idea is you want foreign investment. And when you make a show of it regarding other people's nationales, and you tell me this, would you like it if you were paraded, your people being paraded around, and you want that country to put money into you? Other countries are going to be like, wow, we got to rethink this whole foreign investment thing. And this is something that seriously are not criminals. Folks, I mean, yeah, there may have been a document, there may be errors in the visas, perhaps, but that could be resolved in a conversation and bringing everybody to do their paperwork to figure what's going on. And people who are not correctly there make the arrangements on their own dime to go home, go back and do the papers and come back again to work. Right. And this is kind of like the civil way to do it. I don't know, good human behavior and actually save taxpayers' money, which doesn't have to involve incarceration, buses. All this manpower, you could have sent like four people in with suitcase of briefcases or well, nowadays tablets and try to figure out what went wrong here
Right.
and solve it with one of the biggest companies on the planet. Hyundai is a monster global company. People in America tend to forget that there are other ginormous countries on the planet, ginormous companies.
Oh,
And
it's South Korea's General Motors, essentially. Yeah.
yeah, well, not just there, but I mean, it's a globally huge company,
Right.
right? So now they've basically dinged up faith in not just tourism from Asia, but also faith in foreign investment that they can be treated fairly. And I didn't realize this too, but there's only about 85,000 professional visas in the quota system issued per year.
Oh,
Well,
is that all?
that is all. And the ICE that is in charge of distribution of those visas. So you want more foreign investment. Congress caps your 85,000 professional visas a year, which makes it more difficult for businesses to put investment in if they can't bring anybody over to work, certain jobs that are not available in the United States. And this is a real problem because you can't say you can just transplant one techno expertise from another techno expertise, particularly when you have intellectual property protection issues. So now you have, this is a uncoordinated thing that's happening in the federal government, where they actually have no plan, people, on how to deal with foreign investment, because they should have known this was going to be a problem, but they have no clue what they're doing. I mean, if you had actually spent a year deliberating and looking at the holistic picture of business, and these are not business people. I'm very troubled by the Intel deal, by the way, because that's basically state investment in a private company, which is what China does. Just telling you, it's called communism. So, I mean, I do not like government involved in private business ownership, period. I do understand that other capitalist countries do that in things like public transportation, but that was to help finance the business at its onset. And then the business rates are set by the government because it's considered a central service. Intel is not an essential service. MP is a rare mineral miner. The Pentagon's put in $400 million in the company, and they're actually discussing taking a stock stake, right? And you got AMD and NVIDIA paying 15% of all profits sold to the government. That is basically communism, people. And I love that the Republicans like Rick Scott and talk about things and Harley, oh, this is socialism. So no. You guys never went to political classes. You guys have no idea. Socialism was based off the democratic system, so it was why the CIA kept screwing around with other people's elections around the country during the Cold War to prevent socialistic governments through democratic systems. But those socialized systems, I mean, on essential services, public utilities are often owned by governments, even in capitalist countries, because they're essential services. Not like us, which is all privatized. However, when the government actually takes a stake in your business as a shareholder that could potentially become a voting member or a member of the board, depending on the business, you become like China, which the government basically mandates who gets to be on the board of a business.
It's a direct, just a direct conflict right there.
Well, it's basic communism, right? I mean, I'm waiting for them to take land next. I'm waiting for the federal government just to take land and, try to lease it back to the same company it took it from. I mean, the other aspect of communism is that you don't actually own property. And they're not unique. I mean, Singapore and Hong Kong and other capitalist areas do have government property ownership, but they also have land limitations. When you're stuck on a teeny tiny island, land resource allocation becomes much more important. We're in the United States of America. We're like, what, number three in land mass in the world? I mean, it's a big, big place. So, I'm sure some Republicans will like, says, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I did get my BA in politics. I do know how different government systems run. And I am a capitalist. And if you believe that it's okay for the US government to take a stake in a private business with no wartime interests, no emergency situation where we need to fight to protect our freedoms because of a global conflict, we have a problem.
Speaking of a global conflict, what about what Russia's doing right now?
Oh, he just snubbed the nose of the president and was able to go home and tell, his political and oligarchs and his supporters and, his circle that, he was able to stand on U.S. soil and, got royal treatment. And I'm just going to still continue what I'm going to do and ignore the United States. And, people don't like the idea of the United States being the world police force and whatnot. And I don't actually think United States is a world police force. I think the United States is a world's deterrent from bad behavior. I still believe, and I always will believe, that the U.S. people and the U.S. military and U.S. industrial capacity and U.S. economy is going to be, very strong, very powerful, very long time. And it has a lot of ability to wield a lot of influences in different ways. And Russia is operating on a Cold War economy, and their entire economy is based on a wartime system, which means it's government debt driving the Russian economy. Literally, government debt is driving a wartime economy. And they're in a problem. He knows it. Putin knows it, that if he ends the war in Ukraine, his economy has a problem because he has to pay a lot of debt back in bonds. And they have to bring back down the industrial machine with no capitalist structure to allow them to replace those jobs. And all the men have left because men don't want to go to war. And then you also have a demographic issue that you have a disproportionate number of women and men, and it's the only country on the planet that actually has population reduction that's not caused by birth rate. That's caused by military conflicts. So Russia's a big problem demographically on so many different levels. And what are you going to offer them to stop this behavior? And there's literally, I mean, I didn't hear any deals on the table and things like that. And given the fact it's a global economy, we're not living World War II anymore. There's plenty of ways for them to kind of work around it. And the president's foreign policies are now driving, our lukewarm friends, deeper into the we don't like you mode. And while I don't believe that BRICS, if you don't know what BRICS is, it's basically Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and now they've included another like five smaller countries in South America and Africa. Some are going to create a trade bloc that rivals the European Union or any trade blocs the US is participating in, including our North America trade bloc and our Asian trade blocs that we participate in. That's a farce because that means they have to unify under a single currency, and either Russia or China is going to surrender their currency, and neither will India.
Right.
So, an open trade only hurts all three places because China has historically been a low, high trade bloc, high trading area, only going out, but they don't like stuff coming in. And India is a developing economy where foreign cheap goods would destroy the local economy, actually destroy the local economy if they have foreign cheap goods coming in mass. And Russia, well, there's nothing left to offer but natural gas and oil. So,
Right. Right.
they don't have a lot to participate. And then Brazil is an agricultural-based economy still in many ways that has not flexed its power in Latin America regarding using their business to create foreign investment locally. It's a big economy, but I mean, you're not as interesting until you actually have the capacity to do foreign investment through your local businesses.
Stay tuned. There's a lot going on and a lot of uncertainty right now too.
Well, there's always uncertainty in the world in some level, but right now the circumstances, have created, not necessarily an isolated America, but it created a situation where, there is less faith in us that's ever been, right? We talked about earlier about the lack of foreign tourism, which has a negative impact on our nation. It's probably less than 3% of GDP, but in places like Massachusetts, it's number two or three in our economic drivers, right? Foreign investment, right? The whole visa thing's a mess. And again, we've talked about many times how Congress treats immigration as a political fundraising mechanism and scapegoating as opposed to trying and finding a solution, where our birth rate is under two per family. And immigration's always been the solution regarding our declining birth rate to make sure that you can pay it forward. And if you like your Social Security and you like your Medicare, provided still around, immigrants is the fastest way to make it pay forward properly, right? And it's just having a good public policy on how to make that happen, right? Tariffs, it's going to average 18%, but it's a little tricky because everything is tariffed differently because every product has its own tariff number. Ultimately, consumers are going to have to pay that at some point. I think you're going to feel the pinch going to Christmas. Amazon had stated that a lot of Christmas items went off the shelf first during Amazon Prime Day, which means it could slow down sales in the fall, right? Wage inflation is still happening, but the question is, can getting wage of increase of 4% beat the 2.9 or 3% inflation numbers, right? And you may have good GDP growth, but some of it's temporary. I was listening to Secretary Ludwig today. He's talking about massive construction jobs. Mass construction jobs spike GDP, but they don't create permanent GDP situations because the construction is done. Well, it's done, and what goes into those buildings tend to be not GDP creations because there'll be less employees working there. So, tech industry, for example, you build a massive building, you have, let's say, 1,000 construction workers, but maybe we only need like 50 to 100 people working that building, depending on which tech building you're talking about. Same thing of apartment buildings. Apartment buildings, you have a lot of construction work, but residents don't create GDP when they move in. This is the China problem. China creates a lot of GDP through construction and housing, which is over 25 to 35% of the GDP is driven by construction and housing. But once construction's over, it creates no more jobs, no more money moving. This is not the Eisenhower people. We think we're living in the Eisenhower era. And that's extent. I'll say over again, over again. Biden lives in a time warp. Trump lives in a time warp. And this is not. This is the 21st century, and you have to understand the 21st century economy to be able to guide it to growth and where it needs to go. But what do I know? I mean, as I like to say, I mean, I'm just Generation X, and we're never going to see a president. So, the way things are heading.
Oh, so is this not an announcement by your on your behalf, Tanky?
No, well, remember, Gen X is always referred to as lost generation. It's a theme that started in the 90s about, that lost generation, the gap between the end of the baby boom and then, moving into the, post-Cold War era when it's like interesting spot. So a lot of us, you hear academics refer as lost generation. So, but yeah, no, as you can hear us talking today, there's a lot of global issues. It does affect you and it will affect you eventually on some of these global issues. And, there's a government shutdown this month. If you're waiting for your passport to be processed, if you're looking for unemployment benefits, if you're looking for Social Security assistance, I mean, there's a lot of question marks regarding whether or not the federal government actually has enough human beings to do the work. Everyone loves small government until you need something.
Until you need something. Yeah, exactly. Let's end on a high note. It's Chowderfest time in Quincy.
Yes, Chowderfest is this Saturday, 2 o'clock to about 6 o'clock. There's a live band. There's probably going to be at least 50 different chowder vendors, including restaurants and local. I don't remember the price. I believe it's $10 this year, I think, for someone to go in. I believe it's always been five for many years. Unfortunately, folks, I would not be at Chowderfest. So I apologize to everyone who have seen me in the past scooping, slinging chowder on behalf of no specific group I've endorsed. I get assigned. I didn't pick where I'm slinging chowder. But unfortunately, I would not be here. I'll be traveling on business. Believe it or not, I actually am leaving the state for work first time this year to a refrigeration plumbing association that's going to give me an award, which we can talk about more next week. So very thankful for that opportunity and also to learn more about what's going on a national level. Cooling systems are very important because artificial intelligence needs cooling systems. Those machines
Yes.
are very hot as well as needing a lot of electricity. So it's a good opportunity for me to go out of state to get some education, also being honored as well for my work in state regarding these industries. And also the Democratic State Convention is this weekend. It is an issues convention. It's also this Saturday. It is not a voting convention for endorsing candidates, but it's also a preview of potential candidates for next year, where people looking to run for statewide office or Congress or even local office will start making the rounds with the most active Democrats in their communities to see if they can muster support for whatever office they're looking to run for. So, unfortunately, I'm going to miss the preview, so to speak, of people looking to run for office. So, there actually is a few things going this weekend. But again, I'm so sorry. I'm going to miss you guys who come to Chowder Fest this Saturday.
All right, we'll put some in the freezer for you.
Oh, no.
The Hasnek Community Council does a great job with that every year. It's a fall tradition.
It absolutely has become a fall tradition, and it's a regional event now. It used to be a very local event when it first started going there, well over 15 years now, it feels like. And now it's become basically a signature event for foodies in the region that do not have lactose
That's right.
intolerancy. Because it is all milk, folks. There is no Manhattan chowder. Manhattan chowder is not chowder. That is soup, as far as I'm concerned. If it's not milk, ain't chowder.
And the Yankees are in town this weekend too.
Oh, even better.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. And of course, the Patriots are playing on Sunday. So we're in
Yes.
full sports season. And fall is here. And of course, congratulations to all the folks that made it through the preliminary elections in Ward 6 and at large races. Still plenty of time to register to vote, get your mail-in ballots, plenty of ways for people to participate. And this year, everywhere but Ward 2 has a contested race on the ward level as well as at large and school committee. So I know it's early to do a public service announcement regarding voting, but there's no excuse. There's plenty of ways for people to vote going into this election cycle.
Yes, absolutely. So here's where we ask you to let us know how to get a hold of you, Tacky.
Well, as you heard, I was in public hearing on Monday, so we are in the office, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. We do, as you can already hear, take a lot of phone calls, in this case, a lot of unemployment challenges for folks. I'm in room 42 at the State House. I think we'll see more activity towards the second half of the month regarding advocacy groups, but definitely come visit for a tour. Tour is free. at the State House. I strongly encourage people to come enjoy a free tour to State House. Unfortunately, it's only Monday through Fridays, but I'm in room 42, tacky.chan, tackey.chan, at mahouse.gov, is my email. I do get a lot of testimony because, as I talked earlier, we're in the crunch period of bill reporting out. So people are getting their opinions in now. So it's getting a little overwhelming again. We have our social media at State Representative Tacky Chan on Facebook, as well as at Tacky, I think, underscore Chan on Instagram. But the two things are linked today anyway. So you get one, you get the other. We have basically discontinued using X. So it's at Tacky Chan while it exists. We're migrating over to Instagram, which has a much better following at this point. So we've made a decision to migrate. Tackychan.org is a contact page. People do actually use the form on that page to reach out, but also get a lot of useful phone numbers and local services where you don't have to call me. MELegislature.gov. Very much encourage again, everyone make an account at MELegislature.gov. You can track bills on your own. You don't actually have to ask me to find you something because it's already there to begin with. But if you need help, obviously our office is happy to guide you through the system as best we can. And of course, every week or 2 weeks, I'm here with Joe talking about whatever comes to mind. And if you want to ask a question, it's not my show. Ask Joe, and he can decide what he wants to do about it.
I'm still waiting. I'd love to hear from someone.
I would too. I mean, it gives us an indication of people watching. I have actually people stop on the street and say they've seen me on TV. So that means they've seen me on cable access with you. But with YouTube and the podcast ability, and the fact you can have a global reach because of those mediums, even if you're not a Quincy resident and just want to feel like and ask a question about something happening locally or my thoughts about something internationally, very much encouraged. What's your email, Joe? We've never actually done this part.
Oh, our email. Well, you can send it to QATV at QATV.org.
There you go, folks. QATV at QATV.org. Simple enough, and they'll get your message. And we should actually include that as part of our announcement, by the
Okay, we'll do that from now on.
way. Yeah,
It only
because
took
it's
us
not.
5 years to figure
Yeah, it
that
just takes 5 years to tell you what the email address for QATV is.
But yeah, seriously, we'd love to folks to reach out to us, good or bad. We need to know.
Actually, you're right. If you have issues regarding not necessarily the content, because we have no control, as you can tell, we just talk.
That's
But
right.
you're having like perhaps audio issues, for example. Maybe that's something that the tech team at QATV can address. That maybe it's not just my accent, or sometimes I get a cold. Maybe there's a technical problem.
Great. Yeah, exactly. So either way. All right, Jackie, thank you so much. Safe travels, and we'll catch up next week.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon.